Proverbs chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as in honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger, and thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, How have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the streets. Let them be only thine own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breasts satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of sin. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. This is the word of the Lord. In a previous sermon from Proverbs, I mentioned that seventh commandment issues loom large throughout this book, time and time again, particularly in the first nine chapters. We've already seen it. The father would warn his son about the temptations of this strange woman, about the problem of sexual sins. But it does raise a question. Why would Solomon the Wise, instructing his son, emphasize the danger of the strange woman so much? Why would he put so much emphasis on warning his son against sexual sins? Well, if we look at the history of humanity, we find that it is a common sin, something that people are much inclined to, particularly men. And it is something that needs to be faced and to be overcome. And so Solomon would fill his son's mind with wisdom so that he might know how to resist this kind of temptation. It is interesting to remember in our reading this morning from 2 Chronicles chapter 11, how did Rehoboam respond to this teaching of his father? He ended up not heeding his father's words, but his example as he multiplied many wives to himself. He would have done better to listen to Solomon's teaching. But there is also likely another reason. As we survey the scope of human history, sexual sins have tended to be among the most destructive, both to body and to soul. Matthew Henry said this, "Sexual uncleanness is a sin that does as much as anything blind the understanding, sear the conscience, and keep people from pondering the path of life. Whoredom takes away the heart." Hosea chapter 4, verse 11. it's a striking thing that he said. He said, this sin's peculiar in that it does, as much as any kind of sin, do things to blind your eyes so that you cannot see the truth, and sear your conscience so that even when the truth is presented to you, you will not repent or turn away from this sin. And so we are all in need of warning concerning this kind of sin. This is necessary for mature men, even men that are married and in the safety of one's household. Solomon would have us know that the strange woman is always hunting you. And if you think that she must come up to you in person and talk to you in order to hunt your soul, you are not wise. The strange woman is around us all the time, making her appeal and trying to grab our attention all of the time. Sometimes in person, but sometimes just in passing in public places, trying to catch an undisciplined eye. And you do know that almost all of women's clothing in this day and age is designed to capture your eyes. The strange woman is talking to you all the time. She'll talk to you on the magazine rack. She'll talk to you on a billboard around you all of the time. And Solomon tells us it only ends in one way. And we'll look at that as well. Although we don't frequently think of it, this is important for mature women as well. I know that it is true that women are not as captivated by the lust of the eye as men can be, but women can be attracted by their eyes and by other things as well. Kind words. You did know that during the Middle Ages, where so many were going into the Roman Catholic confessional, that a great many adulteries came out of the Catholic confessional. Why? Because a woman is pouring out all of her intimate secrets to this man, and this man is responding in kindness to her. So many adulteries came out. It's easy to capture the heart. And we also know that it's a very normal thing. If a woman becomes involved sexually, it's very difficult for her to then disengage herself from that man. There are snares here for the mature woman as well. And Solomon would instruct us, give us warning so that we would not destroy our bodies and our souls. But also, there's much useful material here for children. It is a good time to learn these lessons before the fires of passion become inflamed in the breast and in the heart. It is a good time to learn these lessons and to commit yourself to disciplining your eyes and disciplining your hearts at a very early age. I once knew a young boy of 10 years old who had already resolved to discipline his eyes quite thoroughly. So when he would go to a place, a public place, if a woman was not dressed publicly, this 10-year-old boy, and I saw it myself, would turn his head and he wouldn't look. He had already learned to discipline his eyes so that his eyes and his heart would not be taken away from him by a strong woman, by a strange woman. And so if we can learn these lessons early in life, we will do well. Because for those of you that have struggled with these kinds of sins, you know that they're very difficult to root out once they've taken root. To discipline the eyes and the mind after we've already feasted them on these kinds of things is very, very difficult to do. And so, children, I would warn you before you enter into these kinds of problems that can very easily become lifelong problems. Heed Solomon's warning. Learn to discipline your eyes and to discipline your hearts at a very early age. As we come to our text, as has been so common throughout our series in Proverbs, chapter 5 begins with a plea for attention. The father is pleading with his son to pay attention to his teaching. Verses 1 and 2. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. Here we have it again, the call to my son. Again, listen to my instruction. Already we've had four chapters worth of appeals and then instruction, and here we have it again. And as I mentioned, everyone needs to heed this appeal. Not just Rehoboam, but all of us need to listen very carefully to Solomon the Wise. There are few people in the history of the world who have been as familiar with the pitfalls of this kind of sin as Solomon. And he would instruct us so that we might know this disease, not so much like a man that is sick with it, but like a surgeon knows a disease at arm's length. Solomon was a man that at one point in his life was sick with this disease and only later repented of it. But it's an interesting thing. Never his whole life long did he completely escape from it. The strange woman has taken many strong men and many wise down with her. But everyone needs to take heed. Again, seventh commandment sins are particularly tempting and particularly devastating. So we all need to attend and bow our ears here, as Solomon says, to the understanding of the Father. And I've mentioned this before. Why is it that he keeps needing to call for attention again and again? It's because we're so slow to give our attention. Need the wake-up call again and again. Listen. No, son, listen, really listen. The words that I'm delivering to you can help you and be profitable to you your whole life. I know that these things seem distant to you. Perhaps you don't have that burning in your heart for a young man or a young woman. You don't have that kind of thing yet. But there is coming a time, and you must treasure up wisdom during this season of your life if you are going to stand in the day of trial and temptation. Solomon gives two purposes for giving attention, two reasons why the son ought to give his attention. Look at the first there in verse 2. That thou mayest regard or guard discretion. Now, basically when he says, so that you'll guard or regard discretion, the discretion he's talking about is his own teaching. Listen to my teaching so that it might plant itself in your heart, and then work its way out in your life so that you might guard it, would be one possible translation, as something that is treasured up in the heart. It could also be translated regarded, teaching that's in front of your face all the time that you're looking to as you navigate this life's way. So we must attend to this if we are going to guard his instruction in our hearts. We have to listen first before we can guard it and plant it in our hearts. But then he gives a second statement, which is a little bit more rare in the book. He says that he wants you to give attention so that your lips might keep knowledge. A striking statement. Now again, what is the knowledge that is being kept here? Again, it's the teaching of the Father. He's characterizing his instruction, his wise instruction, as knowledge and as discretion. But we must attend very carefully to the Father's words so that when it is time for us to speak, our lips might also be found to possess and to keep knowledge. And there is a pertinent application for us here as well. We must absorb lessons before we have anything valuable to say. We must have open ears before the words of our mouth will have any meaning. And so generally speaking, it's a good idea for the old and the wise to speak more than the young. It's just a good general rule of thumb. The young ought to have their ears open and attentive unto wisdom, so that when their time comes, when they have length of days behind them, they'll have something very valuable to say. I remember sitting in my undergraduate in my philosophy class, and a paper had been assigned. And the paper was what they call an analysis paper. Basically, you were reading another man's work, and you were just saying what he said, just analyzing the thought and laying it out the way that he laid it out. Basically, it's a reduction of that person's own thought. And a student raised his hand and he said, can we write a critique as well? In other words, can I say what I think about what his thought is? And Dr. Martin, who was also a man of years, looked at him and he said, no, it'll be years before you have anything interesting to say about it. And this is very, very true. And he was serious. My whole 4 years, he never asked for a critique on anything. because he wasn't interested in what we had to say about it. At that point in our education, he wanted our ears to be open, to hear and to gain wisdom before we undertook to open our mouths. He said a similar thing about the youth ministry degree there at the time. He said everybody was wanting to go into youth ministry, but nobody's learned any theology or any Bible where they even have anything to say. A striking statement from an older saint who has seen a lot of this life and dealt with a lot of young people as a professor. So here in sum, verse 1 and 2, we have another call to listen and gain wisdom. And this is very important because there is another mouth here that is competing for our attention. Verse 3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. There is something of a literary beauty here in the way that Solomon has laid this out. He said, I want you to bow your ears to my lips so that in turn your lips might keep knowledge. But these are not the only lips that are involved here. There's another one that's going to be speaking to you all the time. I need you to listen to me and my lips so that when the time comes, your heart and your mouth might retain knowledge, because there is going to be another one who is going to be tempting you, another set of lips competing for your attention. And the lips of the strange woman are not giving wisdom lessons, and they're not repeating the wisdom of the Father. She is tempting with her lips. Note there at the beginning of verse 3, that word for. He's giving here the reason for listening to his wisdom lesson. We must be wise and we must speak wisdom to overcome the temptation of the strange woman. So he's saying, you must listen to me because there's another one that's going to come talking. And if you're not careful, she is very persuasive and she is going to take your heart away. And the temptation of her lips is illustrated in two different ways. Imagine a time when they had not yet refined sugar, and how matchless honey would be for its sweetness. And here the lips of the strange woman are characterized as honey dropping, drop by drop from the honeycomb. The honey that would run out on its own was always esteemed the best and was always the sweetest to the taste. And here her lips are characterized as dropping honey, drop by drop all the time. One interpreter said, the strange woman speaks in accents which ooze seductive charms. Everything sounds sweet. Everything sounds delightful. Everything sounds pleasant when the strange woman talks to you. There's a second illustration that her speech is characterized as smoother than oil. It's very easy. We still have this manner of speech when we talk about somebody being smooth. It's very easy to be taken in by what they're saying. Very easy to enter into their world of words. Very easy to imbibe the things that they are saying to you. Because I would have you gain a heart of wisdom and to understand the difficulty, I put a question to you. Who has the upper hand in addressing the sinful sons of Adam for their attention? The father or the seductive woman? The father's got a hard way to go with sinful people because he's talking about a path that does not come naturally. It's the way of righteousness. And he's talking about a path that only comes by effort, struggling after wisdom. Strange woman just wants you to sin, and that comes pretty naturally to all of us. She doesn't require anything but for us to take pleasure in ourselves and in her, and that's very easy for us to be taken with. So it raises a question, and Solomon is going to address this implicit question. What would motivate us to prefer the teaching of the Father with all of its difficulty over the words of the strange woman that are sweet and smooth and everything looks pleasant and it's so natural and it's so easy? Well, the Father, as he has always done with his wisdom, is going to uncover the end of the matter. You might not be able to see this, my son, because you're young of years and you have not seen it. But let me show you what happens at the end of the day when you've listened to this strange woman. Let me show you what's going to happen to her and what's going to happen to all of those that are attached to her. Let me give you the end of the matter, which only wisdom can uncover. Verses 4 through 6. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, but thou canst not know them. So here the Father uncovers the snare. Everything sounded sweet, everything sounded pleasant, but here is the end of the matter. And you remember what Solomon said in chapter 1, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Even silly birds, once the snare is uncovered, don't fly into the snare. And here I am with my wisdom, spreading it out for you and showing you, there's the snare, don't step in it. And certainly you are more foolish than a brute beast if you do. Wisdom has uncovered it for you. So here the snare has a certain camouflage. The woman's words are dropping honey. She portrays everything as being sweet and pleasant. We'll see this in chapter 7, but she says, I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. This is the camouflage that she puts over it. These are the sweet droppings of her lips. Everything sounds sweet and everything sounds delightful. But the Father uncovers the reality, what the reality will ultimately be in the end of the matter. For all the talk of sweet things, the end is going to be bitter, noxious, and poisonous like wormwood, like a bitter and poisonous plant that might for a second taste sweet in the mouth, but goes down into the stomach and becomes bitterness and rottenness. Do not be fooled. The snare has been uncovered. There's another bit of camouflage here. Her mouth is characterized as being smoother than oil, very easy to be drawn in, but the Father, again, uncovers the reality. Her smoothness turns sharp. Her mouth was smoother than oil, but at the end of the day, she's sharp, and she pierces the belly like the two-edged sword. You might also look at it like this if you use the mouth picture. The mouth, as you look at the lips, appear very smooth, but when she opens her mouth, you see razor-sharp teeth like swords that are ready to devour and consume the unwary. Don't be fooled. Solomon is uncovering the trap for all of us to see. He warns us and he tells us what is going to happen to the strange woman, the adulteress. Verse 5. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. In previous sermons, we have talked a lot about the doctrine of the two ways. We have the way of wisdom leading unto life and the way of folly that leads unto death. And here, the strange woman is said to be on the way of folly that leads to death. And only leads in one way. Death. Comprehensive. Physical death. And spiritual death. That is the end of the adulteress. And again, gain a heart of wisdom. Here is the trap and the snare. Solomon is telling us the way that things go. But everyone always imagines that they are the exception. They always, well, I know that, and I know all about, you know, human history, and Solomon the Wise has said that, but I can flirt with it this little bit and be fine, or I'm going to be an exception to this. Ultimately, this is going to work out just fine. This is the wisdom of the ages. The strange woman always ends up dead, physically and spiritually. This is the wisdom of the ages. Those attached to her share her end. And there's no reason to expect yourself to be exceptional. This is Solomon the Wise. This is what he says about it. And consider his latter days. None that go unto her return again. Did you hear that? None that return, none that go in unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. Now Solomon repented, but he was ruined. Samson repented, but he was ruined. These are the kinds of sins that will attach themselves to a man and dog him, even should he repent, all the way to his grave. And there's no reason for us to think that we're exceptional. I would even say this. The very strongest of men and the very wisest of men were snared by this. Men that are better than you, men that are better than me, were taken in this snare. She hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Proverbs chapter 7. So do not be fooled. Her end is always the same. There's no reason to expect an exception. And those that are attached to her, the end is always the same. Verse 6. We need to look at this in some detail. This indeed is a wise saying, because it appears as if there is a double intention. What's the double entendre here? Because there's two possible renderings, both which make sense in context, but very clever. Now here we have it read, lest thou should ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. In Hebrew grammar, the third person singular imperfect and the second person masculine singular imperfect are the same. Now all you need to know about that is that formally they look exactly the same. You have to determine the meaning from context. So he could be talking to his son here, talking to him, second person singular masculine, or he could be talking about the strange woman, third person singular feminine. Okay, so he could be talking to his son or about the strange woman. Now he's been talking about and describing the same woman, so this reading makes a lot of sense in context. Look at verse 6, and let me give you the other possible rendering. The path of life she does not ponder. Her ways are movable or aimless. She does not know it. That's one possible rendering from the words as they're stated. Basically, she is on the way of death. She doesn't look to the way of life. She doesn't even think about it. She is portrayed as somebody that is simply wandering about. Remember the teaching of the Lord Jesus. The way to life is very narrow, and people do not wander into it. It's very purposeful. It's the way of wisdom, the way of thought, the way of biblical instruction. People do not just wander into the way of life. But here she is portrayed as wandering, and the wandering one is only going in one direction. That's the broad gate. You can wander into the broad gate that leads to death, but you do not wander into the broad gate that leads to life. And it said that she does not even know it. She has become so darkened in her understanding because of her sins. She has become so seared in her conscience that she does not even see the destruction that is coming upon her. That is one possible rendering of this verse. A second would be very much the way we have it here. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, but thou canst not know them. This would be a warning to those that are tempted to step into her snare. Basically, looking at her blinds the eyes. You will look at her, and it will not be clear just by looking at her that hers is a way that leads to death. Her ways are described as movable. You look at her, but she's always moving, and she's always adjusting so that she looks pleasant and pleasing. It doesn't look like folly unto death. Looks like a way of pleasure and pleasantness. And she's always adjusting herself so that it looks that way. It always looks pleasant. So her admirers do not know that hers is a way that leads to death simply by looking at her. They need to have wisdom to know that. And her seduction here is presented as preventing a contemplation of the way of life. You cannot have both, and we've talked about this before. You can either be on the path of folly that leads to death, or you can be on the way of wisdom that leads to life, but you cannot be on both paths. And no one is standing on the path of folly unto death, looking over at the way of life longingly. Mostly they're chasing after the strange woman, watching her and following after her and being led on to their grave. So here we have two possible renderings. Is this a description of the woman, the strange woman, or is it an exhortation to the young man? I think that the answer is yes, although it's hard to say. I think that this is a wisdom saying where, because of the two possible meanings, it focuses the attention, because both of these teachings are true and faithful and fit in context. I think Solomon the Wise intends both for us, and both lessons are certainly biblical lessons and edifying lessons. So in sum, Solomon has uncovered the trap for us. Be wise and do not be fooled. I know how things appear. I know that the lips of the strange woman are attractive. I know that they speak of peace and pleasantness and easy times and good company. But Solomon has uncovered the end of the matter. She is on the way to the grave, and she's going to take everyone that is associated with her to the grave. The end of it is bitterness and a sword rather than the sweetness and pleasantness and oil. So if you would escape from this snare, and if you would hear the teaching of Solomon the Wise concerning seventh commandment sins, and no man in the history of the world, I'm convinced, understood them better than Solomon, you will hear the word of the Lord. Let us pray.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's Edmonton, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."